Springbok 9:30 dossier. Every day at this time, we bring you dramatized stories of excitement, romance, and suspense from the files of interesting and fascinating people.
We present The Veil of Darkness, a story of violence and intrigue by Ron Evans. At last, our column was safely out of the dark confines of Rajek Pass and out on higher ground to the north. The terrain sloped upwards every step of the way towards the base of two distant peaks. The ground was rough and stony, but in spite of this, the hurrying fugitives were making good time. Some 300 feet above the pass, Sergeant Ryan and Dmitry Arkhanov and their men confidently held the narrow cleft against a force of some 2,000 Waffen SS troops. After breaking through the defenses, the Germans had poured into the western end of the pass, only to find it deserted, save for some 30 bewildered-looking mules. The only way up was by climbing the narrow cleft in the sheer cliffs which formed the sides of Rajek Pass, a task which was well nigh impossible while their enemy held the top. Violetta and I hurried on ahead of the column towards the path that would lead us out of the mountains and onto the coastal plain. We were accompanied by Lieutenant Leroux, who was an experienced mountain climber, and 20 others carrying equipment we were likely to need to cross a deep ravine. As I walked along at Violetta's side, I seriously doubted this possibility. Leroux was noncommittal, saying he would have to see the ravine before giving his verdict. Our commanding officer, Colonel Horton, had sent 3 patrols over to our east to watch for the approach of any enemy. He believed it possible that Waffen SS Major Scheer might have split his force and was trying to trap them in a pincer movement. If SS troops were coming over the hills to intercept us, in them lay our greatest danger. By some careful reckoning, we worked out that they would arrive at the passage over the pass at the same time as our column of escaped prisoners of war and internees. If such an event happened on open ground, the SS could mop up our 250-strong group in minutes. The 2,000 SS troopers were indeed, at that moment, climbing up towards us some 30 miles away, I would have said that we were most certainly doomed to failure. It was led by Major Scheer himself.
All right, Weser. We'll stop here on this plateau for an hour break. Send Sergeant Fritz to see me.
I am here, Herr Major.
I feel as though I've been climbing hills for days.
Yeah, it is very rough terrain.
I'm almost afraid to ask you, Fritz, but are you sure of the way? Do you recognize any landmarks? It all looks the same to me. Bare rocks and endless hills.
Yeah, we are on the right track, Herr Major. You see the low cliff ahead of us.
Yeah.
It is their cruiser tried to run away from me. He had to climb the cliff to catch him. We tripped at the top and knocked himself out. A lucky chance.
And we will have to scale that cliff?
No. It runs for only 100 meters or so. It will be easier and just as quick to skirt it.
Oh, I'm thankful of that. Let me see. It is nearly 5. Can you estimate when we will reach this passage?
Well, if we continue at our present pace, we will reach some patches of level grassland by morning, say about 10 or 11. Our journey will then be a great deal easier, Herr Major.
The passage, Fritz.
Yeah, the passage. As I explained, Herr Major, I didn't actually reach it. We were ambushed about 2 kilometers short of it.
But you do know where it is. Kozat pointed it out to you, yeah?
Well, Herr Mayor, not exactly. He indicated two peaks and said it was at the foot of them.
Well?
Well, I would say we have about 50 kilometers to go.
Oh, so far.
I hope so, Herr Mayor. I'm beginning to believe even the Russian front is preparable to this.
By this time, the SS troops down in Rajik Pass had long given up trying to climb out. Each attempt was repelled by the dropping of hand grenades onto them from above. Not to mention constant, accurate, and murderous sniper fire from the nearby invisible defenders. At length, Lieutenant Lubber moved his men out of range, back up the pass, and did the only thing possible. He waited. Meanwhile, 300 feet up at the head of the cleft, Dmitri was beginning to feel bored.
They will give up trying.
Well, I think they have. That's a sign of a chili for more than an hour.
We are 40 strong here, Sergeant Ryan. One man alone could hold this position.
Go ahead and join the column if that's what you want.
Well, we should all go. I could leave Maremkin here to hold the clan.
Well, sorry, but I got orders to stay here until tomorrow. Colonel Horton would throw a quabbler if I pulled back now.
Your colonel is a fool. He's an armchair soldier.
Well, I don't like him much myself. He thinks he's Napoleon.
You remember what happened to Napoleon,
yeah, huh? That's right. He got the daylights knocked out of him at Waterloo.
But more important, my friend, at the gates of Moscow.
Something is on your mind, isn't it?
Dark.
Well, come on, don't keep it a secret.
Well, I don't like Germans, you know that. But it would be stupid of me to underestimate them, hmm? We have been fighting a battalion of Waffen SS, huh?
Don't I know it?
So, the Germans, they are not stupid enough to send all their men into Rajik Pass. No, they send, perhaps half, even less. So where are all the others? I do not think there are more than 2,000 men in the pass. So, that leaves about 3,000 unaccounted for.
So, no, I never thought of it like that. Perhaps they're sitting at the mouth of the pass, planning their next move.
No, my friend. Do not think so. We all know now there's another way over the pass. A very difficult journey, but not impossible. Now, Ryan, if you were the German commander, what would you do, huh? You know we have escaped out of the pass. Your men cannot keep pursuit.
Well, I think I'd try and get at us the other way.
Ah, there you have it, Sergeant. I think that while we sit here, about 2,000 or 3,000 Germans are climbing northeast of here to reach us. It will be a forced march. And our Colonel Horden, he could find himself cut off from his route to the coast.
You know, it's a bit grim that the way you're telling it.
That is so, but it is a strong possibility, huh? While we sit here like tourists, that column could be in great danger.
Nothing you and your 8 men can do about it, Lieutenant.
Well, that's true, not by ourselves, no, but we would be of more use at the head of the column. That is where we will go.
Well, there's nothing to stop you. And give my love to old Horton, won't you?
It has been an honor to work with you, Sergeant. Perhaps we shall see one another later, huh?
All right, and cheerio then.
Hey,
Gilligan. Gilligan, come on, wake up. Come on, wake up, man. No. Take over while I have a kip, will you?
Oh, okay, Sarge.
It was getting dark when our column found a suitable campsite. The weary marchers had reached a more hospitable terrain, flatter, where long grass grew. It was what Violetta had described to me earlier as the grazing grounds from the old days when people lived there. The two peaks seemed very close now, not more than 2 or 3 or perhaps 4 hours' march away. Lieutenant Dmitry Arkhanov, formerly of the Kiev Citizens Defense Unit, former ballet dancer, and more recently a prisoner of war, walked into the sleeping camp just before 10. Apart from the sentries, everyone was sleeping after their arduous day's march. After a short talk to Captain Saunders, he went directly to Colonel Horden.
All right, Jeffries. I suppose I'd better see him.
I've just come back from Sergeant Ryan.
Oh, yes? Hello. And how is he?
He's very well, Colonel. He is in a position that could be held forever.
Good, good. Did you want to tell me anything else?
Yeah. I think you can expect the SS to come over the hills to intercept you.
I agree with you. Three patrols are out there now, keeping watch for them.
I see. They just will watch, That is all.
And report back to me if the enemy are sighted, of course.
But not to delay them, Colonel.
Well, no, not exactly. I mean, first, I need to be sure of their existence. After all, it's purely conjecture.
No. I feel it is certain, Colonel. At this moment, I would say they are force marching to cut off your escape route.
Now, all this has been carefully considered.
So, yet you sleep.
Now, look, Lieutenant. I have had a very trying day. Having just climbed up here yourself, you must realize how difficult the journey has been. Now, if you will kindly...
Colonel, please. If your patrols report the presence of a German force, it will be too late. The column will be trapped.
Oh, they would still be miles away.
No, do you know that for certain?
Well, no, but...
Look, I am only a lieutenant, but I know the Germans very well. They will not sleep. Not until they reach here. Please take my advice. Continue the march.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, man. It's the middle of the bloody night.
I have just spoken to Captain Saunders. He says you can reach the escape route in a few more hours marching. Now, please, Colonel, get your people on the move before it is too late. I shall go, but remember that many lives depend on your wise decision.
Now, wait. Oh, bless me, now I've got bloody Russians giving me orders. Whatever next? Oh, yeah. But there is a lot in what he says, I suppose. Jeffries!
Sir?
Call Major Ramsden to see me, and then call Captain Saunders and tell him to get everyone ready to march.
Right away, sir.
Oh, Lady Agnes is going to throw a fit.
Dmitri was astonished to discover how easily Colonel Horden had heeded his advice. Within an hour, the column was again on the move, and fresh patrols sent out to guard the eastern flank. There were surprisingly few complaints. As for myself, well, the party went through the passage along the ledge. But when we'd reached the ravine, it had been too dark to see the opposite side clearly. As dawn broke on a clear, crisp morning, the French officer and I went as far up and down the edge as possible.
It is no use going on. The narrowest point is where the old rope bridge was.
Yes, I guessed as much.
We will go back and see what can be done there.
Well, I don't see how you can possibly get a rope across.
There are ways, but it will not be easy. One rope will be thrown over, and someone will have to swing hand over hand across the ravine to the other side.
Yeah, that's going to be tricky, isn't it?
Very tricky. It's a long way down to the bottom. Then we'll have to copy the original bridge. We are lucky because the anchor posts are still in position.
Yeah, but it was only a three-rope effort.
I know the method. I have crossed bridges like it in the Apennine Mountains.
Well, considering the number we have to cross, surely we can make something more substantial.
Oh, we have the manpower, but there is not enough rope or time, mon ami.
Well, I shudder to think what it'll be like getting all of 250 people across here with a bridge consisting of just three ropes.
It will be difficult and slow. There are many who will be afraid of heights. Some so afraid, I think they will prefer to remain on this side to be recaptured by the Boche.
Now, you don't have to worry about that. I'll see that the Germans never reach this ravine. All we have to do is to blow up the tunnel behind us. And that'll put a mountain between us.
Oui. But it would be a great pity.
A pity? Why?
Well, you would see Rajak pass off from the west. Perhaps forever.
Well, that doesn't matter, does it? Nobody lives here anymore.
Not now, monsieur. But who knows the future? The war is not yet over. There may be others who wish to escape through Rajak Pass, remember?
Yes. Yes. All right, you win. Well, let's get back to the others and make a start. I think an experienced mountaineer like yourself should be the first one to cross the ravine.
I have been anticipating that suggestion.
At that moment, in the sharp early light, 2,000 Waffen SS men poured out of a rocky gully and saw ahead a long sloping stretch of grassland. And on their right was the remains of a shepherd's cottage. Major Scheer called over Sergeant Fritsch.
Oh, that is a wonderful sight, Fritsch. Wonderful. No more climbing, yeah?
Yeah, Herr Mayor. And if you look, there in the distance are two peaks I told you of.
You have done very well, Fritsch. I think we are ahead of time, no?
Oh, there's still far to go, Herr Mayor.
Oh, about 20 kilometers to those peaks, I would say.
Yes, more than that, Herr Mayor. Distances in the mountains are very deceiving.
Even if it's 30 kilometers, I think we have time to take a break for some refreshment. Lieutenant Weser, send some men to that ruin and check it out. We'll break here for an hour.
Corporal George Hallam was in command of a 10-man patrol. During the hours of darkness, he had ranged out northeast from the column, and as daylight broke, his binoculars picked out movement at the far end of the pasture land. He watched for several minutes before turning back to look at his men.
Hey, Carter, come here.
Yes, Corp.
Find your way to the column and report that the Germans are coming.
Right, yeah, Corp.
I reckon about 2,000 at least. We'll stay here and shadow them. Now run like the devil's after your tail.
Took Carter 2 hours to reach the column and report the sighting to Colonel Horton. He had a quick conference with Major Ramsden and Captain Saunders, and then sent for Dmitry Arkhanov.
Hello, Colonel. I was about to take my men east to look for the Germans.
First of all, I must admit your advice was right. One of my patrols has sighted a force of SS approaching over the hills.
How many?
Well, Corporal Hallam estimated 2,000 plus. They are 10 miles east of us.
Then they must be attacked and slowed down.
Well, I've got a message sent by radio to Allied Intelligence asking for possible assistance. Unfortunately, they were non-committal. I suggested an airstrike, which I think rather put them off helping us at all.
If the Germans are so close, Sergeant Ryan and his men will be cut off.
Well, I've sent a message to Sergeant Ryan to evacuate his men from his position overlooking the pass, and I hope they can get back in time.
It will be night when they reach here.
Which will be to their advantage. Well, anyway, I've just spoken to my senior officers. Cossack will guide you, and Captain Saunders will go with you to the passage that leads through to the western side of the mountain. I want you to dig in and hold the passage until all our people are safely through. Now, how many men do you have left?
9, accounting myself.
Oh, goodness me, that's not enough. Lieutenant Brzezinski's force is still intact. Prepare positions for them as well, and he will join you a few miles ahead of the column.
How far away is the passage?
2 miles. Yes, 2 miles. You'll run into Brzezinski halfway.
Have you any mortars, Colonel?
Oh, yes. Major Ramsden said he had 3. Yes. You could use them on the slopes above and at the side of the tunnel. Tell the Major you have my permission to take them.
Good. And plenty of ammunition and grenades, huh?
Yes. Those too.
I will see the Major and leave right away.
Oh, please do, Arkhanov.
Yeah.
Oh, and Lieutenant?
Sir?
If you had not pressured me to march during the night, we would have surely been trapped, and all I can say is, well, thank you.
It took Lieutenant Leroux half an hour to throw a grappling hook across the ravine so that it firmly gripped the back of a projecting rock. From our side, the rope was anchored. The Frenchman stripped down to his underwear and passed us a weak smile. He took a firm grip on the rope and pushed himself out from the edge. Violetta silently stood beside me, her tongue moistening her lips, hands bunched tightly at her sides. The rest of our 30-man group watched silently from the edge of the ravine, as though a movement or a word from them would cause the Frenchman to lose his grip and plunge 1,000 feet to the rocks below. It was an agony of suspense, literally, and it seemed to last forever. In the center, Leroux's legs lost their hold, and for several seconds he swung by the hands, while the rope bounced him up and down. He swung to and fro, and then, with a concerted effort, managed to get one leg over the rope. Then he was on the move again. Altogether, he spent 15 minutes crossing, and an excited, relieved chatter broke out from the men when Leroux swung himself onto the edge of the opposite side of the ravine, stood up straight, and waved across to us. Now it was time for hard work. After their short break, the SS troops fanned out over a 300-meter front and continued their march with patrols ranging out on their flanks and ahead. Corporal Hallam and his patrol retreated to avoid contact. Unfortunately, at one point, he ran out of cover.
Herr Major.
What is it, Sergeant Fritz?
My patrol spotted an enemy group about half a kilometer in front.
How many?
A patrol, no more than 10 or 12 men.
I see. So that proves one thing. The Britishers have found a way out of the pass. They would not have a patrol this far east if their main column is not making for this passage he was supposed to blow up. What was this patrol doing?
Retreating, but keeping us in sight.
We'll leave them be, Fritz. 12 enemy soldiers can do us no damage. But now they will have sent a message back to warn Colonel Horden of our presence. Go ahead and make sure your patrol keeps the enemy under surveillance. At our present pace, I think we will...
Herr Commandant! Planes!
What are they? Can you see?
Enemies! Mosquito fighter bombers!
They're coming in very low. We are their target.
Down! Every man down!
Get back to your patrol, Fritz.
Weser! Get the men in among those rocks! Do you hear me, Weser?
For 15 minutes, the six RAF Mosquitoes flew back and forth, strafing the SS troops with rockets, bombs, and machine guns. Major Scheer desperately tried to get his force into the cover of an outcrop of rocky hillocks, but by the time that had been effective, the RAF planes were turning back towards their Italian base. As they passed over the straggling column of fugitives, the squadron leader broke off and gave a victory roll over their heads. The noise of the attack had been clearly heard, and Colonel Horden caught up with Major Ramsden, who was at the head of the column. He now had a clear picture of the Germans' position, and so did everyone else. The pace quickened and became a race. Meanwhile, our work on crossing the ravine was going better than I'd anticipated. The men were building, or rather weaving, a V-shaped bridge consisting of three stout ropes, the sides being held by intertwined lengths of thick cord. It was Lieutenant Leroux's brainchild, born of desperation. Gradually, the shape grew longer until it reached the 40-foot mark. For the life of me, I couldn't see how it would work, or even remain in a V-shape when somebody tried to cross. And it was heavy. Two men volunteered to cross the ravine in the same fashion as Leroux, when it was realized that one man would never have the strength to haul it across alone. From the corner of my eye, I saw a figure approaching along the ledge and recognized the grinning features of Dmitry Arkhanov.
So, this is a bridge?
Hello. Have you come to give us a hand?
No, Tovarich, to guard you. My men are digging in on the hill above the tunnel. You are going to get 250 people across that?
I hope so. There's no other way.
Well, it will take a week. And the Germans are only 8 kilometers away.
The Germans?
Yeah. You did not know? They have come over the hills from the east.
Oh, damn it. It's that German sergeant who escaped. He must have shown them the way. Where's our column?
A kilometer from the tunnel. Lieutenant Brzezinski is already taking up position with my own men.
You'll have a big fight on your hands this time, Dmitri. This may be Major Scheer's last chance to stop us.
It won't be worse than when we fought in the past. And now your planes are helping us.
How do you mean?
Oh, you will have seen and heard nothing here. Your Air Force flew in an hour ago and struck the SS. With luck, they will have slowed down their advance.
We're ready, Lieutenant.
All right, Wilkins. Are you ready to take this train?
When I look at that bridge, it makes me wish I was a bird.
The Veil of Darkness was written by Ron Evans, produced by Yolan Dotman, and directed by Henry Diffenthal.
Springbok 930 Dossier, dramatized for broadcasting and brought to you on Springbok Radio.